say was made to do the things that I want to. As long as I'm not there with you, 'cause it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem right.
Welcome to the Wobble and Wubs podcast with your host, me, Athonia Capelli. This show is all about the electronic music genres that feature dance beats, spanning everything from house and techno to trip-hop and melodic bass. We interview bass music producers, musicians, event organizers, and pretty much any old wook who rolls up and claims to be a big deal. The track we're hearing now is called Doesn't Seem Like and was released by Esoterica. Esoterica's members are Jason Dunwoody, aka Jay Sharp, and Carl Wen. Carl Wen is the guest on our show today. So let's get straight in. Today I'm joined by a special guest, someone who's been a force in Northern California EDM scene, a DJ and producer who's been making waves in Santa Cruz and beyond. Carl Wen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So what's up with some of the music you're writing and releasing right now?
I'm doing a variety of different styles of music right now, kind of trying to find my own definitive style, I guess you could say. I didn't anticipate putting out the drum and bass track, but I did. So I'm jumping around different styles, and mostly what I'm trying to focus on now is I'm taking more of a perspective of wanting to perform. DJing and music is always a performance to some extent, right? But I want to create a cohesive flow of different styles of music. I want to incorporate all different types of elements, including like stage performance, like dancing and visual elements. So I'm starting to produce tracks as if it's part of a set, like one after another, like, okay, what's the next song I want in the set? You know what I mean? And I still got quite a few tracks that I'm going to be releasing in the next several months that are part of that group of music that I was doing previously that's kind of getting wrapped up. But now I'm approaching music a little differently.
So are you releasing singles, or will they come out on an album, or both?
The tracks I was doing before, where I was kind of just jumping around, I was just releasing them as singles. And I'm probably going to do that a few more times with the first set of music that I started releasing. Now, this new set that I'm working on, I want to release as an album. That's my intention, is by spring 2025, I want to release my first EP, but maybe an album, preferably an album. And I'm trying to produce it like one body. Like, it's going to be like a performance where it's like mixes from one thing to the other, like where it could be a mix, but it's also going to be broken out into separate tracks and released as an album.
What's the creative process like when you're creating new tracks?
First of all, it's my mood. It just depends on how I feel that day. Like, I'll wake up in the morning and I'll be like, I'm going to work on music today. And sometimes the mood is like dancey and high energy, and sometimes it's mellow. Like, I did make a track that was kind of like an R&B track that day was foggy and kind of misty outside, and I felt really mellow and I wasn't really feeling like I wanted to make a dance track. So I guess a lot of the creativity that comes from just basically how I wake up in the morning and how I feel that day. So I learned this. I was in a producer meetup with the producer Ill Gates. He called it Producer Dojo. And back then it was called Class 808. And one of the things that he inspired me to start doing is I look for like what I call a spark. And it's just basically something that you hear where you're like, I can hear this being something really awesome. Like, it could be just like a vocal. It could literally be a sentence from a movie. It could be a piano, or, you know, chord progression. It could be anything, but it's something that you hear and you're like, because once you have that like spark, it feels like the track kind of writes itself. You don't really have to put a whole lot of thought into it. You have that one thing. And then it's just like in my head, all of a sudden there's a whole song there and I just have to like get it out. So the creative process, a lot of times, besides, of course, how I feel, but it's also, you know, getting that one spark, that one thing where the song just kind of comes alive in my head. And then I flow with that. So I have actually a whole folder of just things I consider to be sparks. I'll sit down at my desk and just go through them until I hear something that really inspires me. And then I just flow off that.
Oh, excellent. And what kind of software and hardware and stuff are you using in that process?
I'm using Ableton. I mean, I have like a MIDI controller keyboard. I have one Moog synthesizer, a little fatty for subs. But most everything I do is on VSTs. I use Serum a lot.
I thought I heard you mention last week something about Fab Filter. Is that another one, the EQ? Uh-huh.
Yep, I use the Fab Filter suite. I got a lot of Universal Audio plugins. My audio interface is the Apollo X4. So once you have like the Apollo or once you have like the Universal Audio interface, you have access to all their plugins, right? Like not all of them, but I have access to a good suite of them. And then FabFilter, you know, and I just have a lot of random ones that I subscribe to. Like I got Silent for synthesizers. I also have Valhalla. I like their reverbs. It's so beautiful, especially the Supermassive. It's like, you know, you can make really epic reverb effects. I have a ridiculous amount of plugins. I'm not going to lie. It's like unnecessary. I don't even use like 99% of these things, but I have them.
And Valhalla is just an amazing deal. I think it was only like $50 or something. And it's just like everyone uses that. And yeah, it's really beautiful. So I wanted to move on to kind of your DJing.
So I'm kind of backing off from DJing right now, mostly just because like I don't have the time and resources to both DJ and produce music. The only time I have to really work on music is on weekends. And so if I'm DJing or preparing for a set, I'm spending all this time and energy staying up late and then DJing and then not feeling like making music on Sunday. Like Sundays are my music days, typically speaking. So I'm kind of like not doing as much DJing. I do have a couple things lined up, one of which is going to be like a Abbott Square Thanksgiving dance party that Carly's putting together that I agreed to. And I've offered to like DJ a few small local parties, but I'm like for the first time saying, no, I can't DJ. I need to like focus in on my album. So I want to have this album released by May. So I need to like focus in and yeah, spend my available time doing that.
I assume you intermix music you produce with other people's music and work that into your set maybe next summer after the album releases?
That's my intention.
Nice.
Yeah. Very good. That's my intention. You know, the other thing is it's kind of like I could just go DJ and play music that I have, like, and it wouldn't be a big deal, right? I could just walk up and just freestyle off my playlist, but the people laugh at me. Like my friends constantly make jokes about like how ridiculous I am about making sure that every time I go play, it's like as new music as I could possibly find, you know? Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't work out because there'll be a drought or whatever. I'll have to play music that I played at an earlier party or like 2 months earlier or whatever. I literally sit there for hours and hours and hours and go through every release track on Beatport and filter out the stuff that I like and try to always have a set where it's like brand new content. But that's what makes it exciting for me. I mean, if I'm playing music, I get bored really easily too. So I like I'll love a track and then after a week I'm like, I don't want to play that anymore. But yeah, I don't do it just to be like, oh, I'm releasing new stuff. But that's what excites me. That's what makes it fun for me, is like being able to like unveil new music to people. But then it comes at a cost, right? Like I'm spending hours and hours and hours preparing just for one set. So if I didn't do that, I probably could do more parties and I wouldn't have to worry so much. I could just like walk up and go with my thumb drive. But my obsession is part of the problem.
Do you ever envision using Ableton Live, you know, live?
You mean the performance aspect? Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I am actually looking into that right now. I'm kind of taking a step back and looking at all the DJ gear and all the performance gear and trying to figure out like what's going to be the way that I'm going to go forward in my performance aspects, right? Like, I mean, obviously, if you're doing like big stage stuff, you get CDJs. It's pretty much it. You don't want to like lug in any like control or anything. But I want to be able to perform using that technique. And, you know, like I watched Fred again and Skrillex do their performance in San Francisco, and I watched pretty intently on how they were doing things. And they have like, you know, the four CDJs going, and they have like the main tracks going on in the center decks. But on the outside decks, they have like just vocals or just instrumentals where they can like bring it in, add effects, do interesting things with it. And then they drop the track, right? Like the full version of the track. So I was watching them do that, and I was like, that's a good method. But I was hoping that there would be something better in terms of gear that would come out that would make Ableton more user-friendly for performance, because I kind of want to still go with the flow of like a DJ set, because, you know, the goal is to make everybody dance, right? I want to keep everybody dancing and whatnot. But I do want to be able to do some like impromptu like remixes on the fly. So I'm not exactly sure like what direction I'm going to go in, but I'm definitely approaching from that perspective.
Yeah. So I've watched a lot of the Fred again, live sets, and he always does something really weird. Like he did the one on a rooftop where he just had a single deck, but he was still beat matching songs together on a single deck. It was just, it's a, you know, a CDJ and then a mixer. And I think you must have been using the sampler and like sampling a piece of the percussion on the outgoing song, because he would bring in a second song. So I was kind of curious how he did that. But most of his live sets I've seen, like Boiler Room, he has a Machine Plus with the native instruments.
Which I'm definitely going to be getting, because I want to start getting into live drumming, which I'm not good at right now. Like, like if I tried to even do a basic drum situation, you would be like, this is terrible. But it's definitely a goal for me. So I have that in my cart. I'm planning on buying that soon. So, but
those, right on.
Yeah. He's amazing. I would love to see that video too. Send me the link on that. I'd like to check it out.
Sure thing. I'll put it in the show notes and I'll send it to you on chat as well. So changing gears a little bit here, something I'm personally very excited about is that you started up a new music producer gathering, kind of workshop at Santa Cruz Recording Studios, which is used to be called 365 Studios, but at the corner of Fair, right near Mission.
Right. I think it's called Santa Cruz Recordings now. Yeah.
Oh, Santa Cruz Recordings is the name of it?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Yeah, it's which is, you know, an appropriate name. It's a really beautiful studio with great acoustics, and they've got lots of nice amps there that people can use if they're a client. So can you tell me a little bit about that? Like what your inspiration was, and then maybe where you hope to see that go? And did you do it to sort of hold yourself accountable to, you know, making music on the regular, or what were some of the reasons that you got that going?
To start out, like, they already had a meetup going prior to the COVID lockdown. And I only got to go a few times, unfortunately. So, but when I went, I was like, this is awesome. Like, it was really cool to be in a room with artists, talking shop. You know what I mean? Like, we like to chop it up and just talk about music and all the things that we're doing. And I, you know, when I was there, I was like, oh, this is so awesome. I can't wait to keep coming to this. And then all of a sudden, COVID happened. and then they just stopped doing it. It just stopped happening. And I was really bummed about it. And I kept looking. I was like, why? You know, is that, I wonder if this is going to start back up. I wonder if this is going to start back up. And I kept checking, and it never did. So I reached out to the guy who runs the studio, Chris Cottingham. And I was like, hey, bro, like, I'm happy to just take the reins on this if you'd let me do that. And he was like, yeah, go for it. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. I'll get it going. And that was the primary motivation. And yeah, ultimately, it's just like, it's just nice to be around creative people. Creative people inspire me, and hearing people's ideas, just chopping it up, talking about things. It's always really interesting, like how that can lead to something so amazing sometimes, you know. Like, I can't count how many times I was in a conversation with somebody where we're like, oh, this would be cool, we should do that. And then it ended up happening. And then you're standing there a year later and it comes to fruition and you're watching, like, Bam Jam, for example, with Carly. Like, it was just a conversation that we had. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm standing there and at the camp out, and I'm like, wow, this happened. You know what I mean? So I like that idea of just like getting people together that are like-minded, where inspiration's just bouncing around and the energy is building because cool shit happens. But also telling people I'm going to release a track, it's nice to have people be like, when's that track coming out, bro? Like, you said you were going to have that track out last month. Where's it at, man? You know, I need that. I need that too.
Yeah, accountability piece, yeah, maybe.
I'm super lazy, I'm not going to lie.
I mean,
it's nice to have that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I attended the first one, and I'm very much looking forward to it, partially because of, you know, potential accountability. But also, I feel like if I'm working on a song and I just can't, you know, I can't finish that last 10%, I could probably reach out to someone who is attending as well. Someone like Hawk, he mastered most of the songs on the album that Poison Sky released. And, you know, partnering up for that last leg can, I think, sometimes push you to the finish line. So
yeah, and that last 10% is the hardest part.
Yeah.
You know, well, like, sometimes the tracks just flow out and then you're like, it's not done yet, but that last 10%, you know, it's like, where's that inspiration coming in? And it gets hard. Sure.
Yeah. Do you envision it just being producers, or could it also be people who are perhaps artists who could do album art design or video, you know, music video creators? Do you envision having a wider audience like that that might be able to attend?
Sure, absolutely. Like, no, I mean, I don't know. We would have to figure out a way. I don't know how to like keep it from being boring to them, because they might not want to hear us talking about audio stuff the whole time. Like, so we'll have to be totally flexible and willing to evolve with the needs of the group. But I didn't call it music producers meetup. I called it producers meetup. So, you know, any producer of anything that, you know, in the realm of music and entertainment, arts, whatever, I feel like is totally welcome and encouraged to come. And then we'll just have to figure out how to like facilitate the meetup to accommodate those people. I really hope that we do get some artists in there, like to do album art or video artists or anything, you know, DJs. That's another thing. So the first meetup, there was quite a few DJs that don't haven't even produced, but they were like, came through to like hang out and support, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, and I welcome everybody.
That's great to hear. Yeah. The person that you met who came, who got there before me is a longtime friend, but she's actually a really great artist. And she said she felt a little awkward being there. And I was like, you've participated in making a lot of people's music releases visually appealing. And I think Carl's more than happy to have you there. So that's what I communicated to her, because that was the feeling I got. So it's good to hear you.
Yeah, I really encourage that. I want people to come through. I'm not just saying that they're welcome to be there. I want them there. we want creative people of all types to be there. And you never know, like in the soup of different skill sets, like what talents could emerge or what type of art could come from that. Oh, a perfect example is Maculate. Maculate's going to come and do he's going to be one of the featured artists for one of the upcoming producer meetups. We're still trying to lock in a date because he's a really busy guy, but he is amazing. Not only just an amazing producer, like DJ, crazy good DJ, but he also does like visuals that match his music. And so I asked him if he would come and show us how he does that. You know what I mean? So yeah, every type of artist is welcome.
Yeah, Maculate is, he's played a few events that I've hosted, and he brings a video that looks like it might be out of the copyright range. Like it looks like it might be like 100 years old, and he animates this kind of like old pencil sketch animation to the beat of the music, and it actually looks like, you know, these little critters are dancing along with the at least that's what I've seen. And so he's
pretty cool, because like he does that too. He's not even the DJ, like he does that for other people too. One of the things I guess he does is he has the video is linked, it's like beat synced, so like he has a little control there, and he'll just beat match whatever you're playing, and then the video will just be right on beat with what you're doing. It's pretty awesome.
Wow. Yeah. It looks like it's hand drawn, and it's actually pulsing to the beat of the music. So, one more question just about the producers and, you know, people who might come to this event. Do you have advice for younger producers, or just like producers and DJs for that matter, who are just getting into the game and trying to find their voice in this competitive field?
Sure. Like I started producing when I was 20. I'm 45 now, but I didn't put out a track in 20 years. Like this is the first year where I'm actually putting out music. And you might ask, like, why is that? Well, it's not that I couldn't do it. I just didn't approach music production or DJing in a professional manner. And I think that was a big eye-opening experience when I started participating in the producer meetup that Ill Gates was doing. It's a class of 808. One of the things he said is like, and this was typical. And I feel like when I meet producers, especially new producers, this is how they do it. They'll like light up a joint. It'll be like 6 o'clock at night. They're lighting up a joint and they're going to mess around with music. And they're like, I don't know why. I just never get to where a track is done. Well, there's a few reasons for that. Number one, you know, if you're intoxicated, it's okay to be a little intoxicated, but it does affect your workflow. Like you're not going to be as on top of it, and you're going to be forgetful, and you're not going to, you know, if you're doing a job that required a lot of thinking, for example, you probably wouldn't light up a joint at work, right? Like you, because you're trying to get stuff done, and you wouldn't be a very productive person. Maybe you are. I'm not. I can just speak for myself. I'm not. So that's one thing. And the other thing is like, I would try to produce a song 6 o'clock at night. And here's the thing, whatever I'm feeling at that moment, whatever my inspiration is, whatever music's in my head, if I go to sleep and I wake up the next day, it's gone. Like I'm not going to recall the feelings, the thoughts, or anything that was part of what made that track special. Right. So instead of like starting a track at 6 o'clock at night, I get up in the morning. That's why I do Sundays. I get up in the morning, I drink coffee, and I go all day. And I get up early. I'll get up at 8 a.m. and I'll go to 8 p.m. because my goal is to try to like whatever inspiration I have and whatever song is in my head, I want to get it out before I go to bed. Because I know that the more I get it out, because you get to that last 10%, of course, is the hard stuff. That's when you spend a lot of time. But most of the time, my tracks come together in 3 or 4 hours. You know, like it'll just flow out of you. And then the little elements, that last 10%, takes a lot longer to produce something that sounds good with what you already did. So I approach it like a job. You know, if you want to take music seriously and you want to be really good at it, I think most producers that I have been meeting, when I talk to them about their production style and what they do, I was surprised to find out that like this is a normal thing. They get up in the morning and they go all day, and they treat it like it's a job shift to some extent, because you're trying to produce something of quality. So that was a big game changer for me. And that would be the advice I'd give to anybody. If you really want to take music seriously, approach it like you would like your career. You need to like hit it like you would hit like a job. If you were going to do anything, you'd get up in the morning, drink your coffee, and put in a full 8 hours on that track and in a single day. And I think that if you can do that, you'll find that your development or the process will run a lot smoother.
Excellent advice. So two more questions just about kind of music preparation and stuff. Do you ever sample actual chunks of music, like someone else's music, like old R&B track or something like that? Obviously, you use samples for like drum hits and stuff like that, but do you ever actually sample and create loops off vinyl or whatever sources?
Yeah, so I don't do vinyl anymore, just because the process of taking a vinyl record and like recording it and getting the pops out of it and all that stuff. Like usually I can just Google almost any record and find it on YouTube. Like I'll go to YouTube and just put any record in that I have on vinyl, and then I'll find it and I can just download it, right? It saves me a lot of energy. So I haven't really been doing the record thing for a long time. Like if you go digging, like you'll find singles with like remixes that you won't find very easily online, but there's more than enough material to inspire tracks, right? Like you can do that, but it's not like, you know, it's a lot of extra effort, and I haven't quite had like it pay off in any meaningful way, but it's fun. But I do like find myself like, yeah, I'll look for acapellas. Before, you had to kind of look for an acapella, right? We didn't have AI where you could extract the voice from a track. But now there's like software, it'll take the vocal track out of any track that you upload. It's pretty amazing. It does a really good job. So I've been doing that a lot lately. I've been paying for a service. It's called Lala. It's LALAL.AI. And then you just pay for the amount of minutes and you can just upload anything. And it not only does it do vocals, but it also will do like the instruments and then like the bass separately and drums and all that kind of stuff. So you can basically just like separate all the elements of a track and fairly well. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's pretty good.
Well, so on the topic of AI, what do you think about these services such as like Udio and Sumo? And do you envision yourself perhaps using them, or do you have any kind of feelings about those products in general?
So to be honest, I've pretty much boycotted it, you know, like because I'm trying to like, I want to be creative and I don't want to like rely on AI tools to govern how my music's made. And I don't have a bias against it. It's just a personal preference. Like, you know, it's kind of like people who use the sync button on CDJs, you know, are like, if you want to, I don't care. Like the point is like ultimately the goal, right, is that we're trying to produce a product that people enjoy. Like, be it DJing or music producing, you're trying to create a product. And like, if you're a painter and AI can help you make a better painting, use AI. But for me, the thing that really feeds me is the creative spark, like the something new and different. I'm always digging for like when the music that I listen to on a personal level, like I'm very much into hip hop, but I listen for people who do things differently. I feel like there's been a ton of music released in the past 20 years alone. But if you listen, you know, go through the whole history, if you think back, like what are the songs that actually like last to you? Right. It's not the songs that are like popular per se. It's the ones that had like nuances to them that were unique and different that nobody else did. Those are the ones that people appreciate more because it's kind of doing something different. And well, I guess the word I would use is novelty. Right. Like AI can't do novelty. Not yet, at least. I mean, maybe someday they will, but they'll be able to code in a creative engine to come up with new ideas. But basically what AI is an aggregator of existing information, right? It's taking what people generally like about a track and it's recreating it and it's trying to maximize that as a tool, which, like I said, it's fine. It can help in certain ways, but that's not what makes me excited about music. What makes me excited about music is even if it's doesn't sound that good, I look for the stuff that's unique and different. Until AI can do that, I don't really see myself wanting to be part of that.
Okay. Well said. Yeah, that's fair. Well, I'm going to start wrapping up, but I do want to ask you, you mentioned hip hop influence. And then I recently learned from one of your posts that you used to be a B-boy yourself and would do the kind of breakdancing and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, breakdancing, breaking. I mean, B-boying, it's all the same thing. But I started dancing when I was like 11, 12 years old. And I got into hip hop dancing pretty early. And back then they were doing like they call them Froggers and like the Rex and Effect style of hip hop dancing where you're kind of like, you got a partner doing like teamwork and stuff like that. And then like breaking in my neighborhood got really popular. And I went to a high school dance. One of my first high school dance freshman year. And I was like 13 years old. And I saw like a breakdance battle for the first time. And not the first time, because obviously I was young, but I was still in LA in the 80s. So I saw a lot of breakdancing. I used to go to Venice Beach. I'd see breakdancing there. But it changed. You know what I mean? It wasn't like what you saw back then, where people were just dancing on cardboard and doing backspins. Like, it had evolved. And the moves were way more sophisticated and interesting. So I was like in. And I basically, I'm not going to lie, breakdancing was my obsession for like 10 years. And I was competing and I was getting, you know, I got pretty good. I was a power mover. That was my thing. I always really respected style and wanted to be good at style, but that wasn't really my niche. I was more of the power move guy in our crew. But yeah, I was in battles and B-Boy Summit and all kinds of stuff. But being in Visalia, that's where I grew up. It was a small city. And not having a lot of money, I wasn't able to attend a lot of the bigger battles, which really bums me out because I wish I would have been able to, you know, get out there a little bit more. But yeah, B-boying was my obsession until I had a kid and then working full time. And I kind of had to stop doing that because I just didn't have the time to keep up with it.
If you don't mind, I'll put the link in the show notes to the video that you posted, if that's okay with you. And
yeah, absolutely.
Where can people reach you? Can you give us like a list of your social media handles? I know Lodeca is your DJ name. Maybe you could even summarize like your Instagram, Facebook, and any websites that you have.
Sure. I'm mostly on Facebook, like old school style. If you want to get in contact with me or follow me, Facebook's the way to do it. Or Instagram. I have my profile Lodeca, Lodeka, but I also have a music profile with my friend Jason. We have a group called Esoterica. It's Esoterika. And we have social media profiles for that. Otherwise, just, yeah, Facebook.
Excellent. Well, I will be sure to link those in the show notes. And thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. We're going to be all ears waiting for your new releases. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
The track we're hearing now is called Promises and was released by Esoterica. Esoterica's members are Jason Dunwoody, aka Jay Sharp, and Carl Wen. Their music can be heard on Spotify, Apple Music, and pretty much anywhere else that you get your streams. You can also find them on SoundCloud and playing live in Santa Cruz and all around the Sierra Mountain Range, really, during summer festival season. Please jump into your podcast software right now and rate this with 5 stars, as it really does help us in ranking and getting the word out about this offering. Don't forget to share with your friends so they get a chance to enjoy this podcast as well. This has been the Wobble and Wubs Show. Thank you for listening, and please point your podcatcher to our next episode. Ooh.